From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. New York Times best-selling investigative author Edwin Black comes to our area next week for a series of speaking events. His work focuses on topics related to human rights, genocide, corporate crime, and government corruption. We'll explore the history of the American eugenics movement and other surprising links to Nazi Germany. And with record high rainfall this winter continuing to cause problems across southwest Florida, we'll explore current conditions for Lake Okeechobee, the Caloosahatchee River, and Gulf waters, along with what local officials are doing to help better address the problem in the future. Plus, we explore a new study linking exposure to a particular algae toxin through seafood to increased risk of brain diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Record-high winter rainfall continues to plague South Florida, and the question of what to do with all that water is a growing concern. Backpumping water into Lake Okeechobee, coupled with increased discharges down the Caloosahatchee River, has led to nutrient-laden, murky brown water flowing into the estuary and out into the Gulf. It's a concern for both environmental health and the region's tourism-driven economy. We'll get the status update on current conditions, what water managers are doing to address the issue, and how local officials are fighting to prevent such issues in the future. Plus, we'll learn about a new study linking exposure to a blue-green algae toxin to increased risk for certain brain diseases. Those conversations are coming up later this hour. But first, the Holocaust Museum and Education Center of Southwest Florida brings New York Times bestselling author Edwin Black to our area for a series of talks next week. Black's investigative works tackle topics related to genocide, human rights, corporate crime, and government corruption, to name a few. His books have garnered numerous awards, including nominations for both the Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award. He's spoken to audiences around the world, including before the United Nations, the British House of Commons, the Canadian House of Commons, and the Israeli Knesset, along with the U.S. House Committee on Foreign Affairs. In his books, like IBM and the Holocaust and War Against the Weak, Black draws some surprising connections between U.S. companies, philanthropists, and others to the Nazi regime's final solution. Edwin Black, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
And thank you very much for having me, John.
I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And to start off, I understand your parents were Holocaust survivors. Has that in large part shaped your interest in pursuing these types of investigative topics?
I would say it ignited my interest. My mother was pushed out of a train on the way to Treblinka, and my father walked away from a shooting pit. And they found each other and lived as partisans in the woods for 2 years. And when I was growing up, I was born in this country. It was my determination to not only discover and report what had happened, but who was responsible, who were the hidden hands, who got off scot-free. And I've devoted a half century of research and publication to this mission.
And I want to just delve right into the meat here, and let's talk about what you reveal in your book, IBM and the Holocaust. I mean, you say IBM, in particular its founder, Thomas Watson, is guilty of genocide and really consciously co-planning and co-organizing the destruction and murder of people for money, and that they created customized programs to organize literally each phase of the Holocaust.
Well, you've said it completely correct. Thomas Watson was a sociopathic war criminal. He was already a convicted extortionist by the time he was hired by IBM back in the early part of the 20th century. I realize they're trying to rehabilitate him with a game show computer and things of that nature. But Thomas Watson micromanaged from his offices in New York and later through his overseas subsidiaries all six phases of the Holocaust. That is, the identification of the Jews, the expulsion from society, the confiscation of their assets, the ghettoization, the deportation, and even the extermination of the Jews. It was not done with computers. It was done with the predecessor process, which were Hollerith punch cards. And Thomas Watson ensured that there would be an IBM customer facility in every concentration camp, that the banks would all run on IBM punch cards, the trains would all run on IBM punch cards, and that the company IBM and its overseas subsidiaries would move through Europe in cadence with the Nazi takeover of the continent. When they went into Poland, Watson ensured that an IBM subsidiary went into Poland. In fact, he named this for himself, Watson Business Machines. When the Nazis went into Holland, he made sure that when they just before they got there, that a brand new IBM a company called Watson Business Machines was in position to catalog the entire population, identify the Jews, and export them to concentration camps for mass murder.
And IBM had something of a monopoly on information technology at the time anyway. I mean, did they really need the Nazi Party as a client? Was money really their primary motivator here?
Yes. When first of all, the Nazi regime, which the IBM relationship began in the first days of the Third Reich, from January 30th, 1933, and continued to the last gasp of Hitler's Germany on about May 5th, the Nazi project, which IBM sought out, was its second largest project after the Social Security Administration, and it was its number one foreign relationship, number one foreign source of income. When you look at IBM Germany today, that company has not been reinvented. That company has not been recreated. That company is the very same company, this multi-billion-dollar corporation, the very self-same company that Thomas Watson instructed to organize the destruction of the Jews, the rape of Poland, and the takeover of Europe. And most damningly, it was Watson who received a 1% commission on everything the Nazis did, and consequently, he had a vested interest in every punch card and every gassed Jew.
And I don't imagine IBM would have been terribly cooperative in your investigation of this book. Where did you get the documentation for this?
IBM tried to hide the documents from me, and they, of course, I went into various countries and got thousands of documents from various public and private archives, but the ones I wanted were the IBM corporate documents. They would not reveal them. When they got a lot of pressure, they overnighted them to New York University for study, so-called study, to keep these documents on the move. And where did they send them to? To a biblical archaeologist, one of the historians often quoted on mysteries of the Bible. He didn't know what they were. Mm-hmm. So when I approached him, he said, "I don't know what these documents are. I don't have any permission to give them to you, but I'm taking a long lunch." He took the long lunch. He nodded to his closet. My team went into the closet. We Xeroxed everything. I got the story. And tomorrow morning, your station manager is not going to get a phone call from IBM saying, "How dare you accuse us of genocide?" They're going to say nothing.
So they haven't tried to file a lawsuit or say anything responding to the publication of your book?
They haven't even denied a syllable, let alone file a lawsuit. They haven't denied a syllable. They haven't answered a question in the thousands of questions that have been asked by world leaders, by politicians, by students, by journalists and historians for over 15 years.
Wow. Well, let's go ahead and delve into some of your findings in War Against the Weak and the American eugenics movement. I found this particularly interesting because, you know, I would have thought growing up in school, this is something I would have learned about. And I remember learning absolutely nothing about the American eugenics movement except from your book. And in fact, that movement is responsible for directly influencing Adolf Hitler's own ideology of creating a master race.
Yes, Adolf Hitler came from a tradition of racial supremacy and of Jew hatred and racism and, of course, extreme nationalism. But what it was, the American pseudoscientific theories of eugenics, the quest for a white, blonde, blue-eyed master race of Nordic tradition, which he interpreted as Aryan, that allowed Adolf Hitler to escalate and elevate his race hatred into a medicalized science. This is what gave him cover. And it wasn't just the ideas. We're talking about the Rockefeller Foundation, which sponsored the program that sent Mengele into Auschwitz to commit these horrid experiments on twins. We're talking about the Carnegie Institution that established the concepts of the master race, that sent one of its own to devise the Nuremberg Laws on who was a Jew and who was a half a Jew and who was a quarter Jew, and to inflict their theories on Americans before the Hitler regime and during the Hitler regime and indeed after the Hitler regime, so that some 60,000 Americans were forcibly sterilized, mainly women, in some 27 states, pursuant to legislation and to court orders, which were completely racist in nature. Hitler took these ideas, took the science, took the political backing, took the organization, took the money from Rockefeller, Carnegie, and to a certain extent the Harriman Railroad fortune, and applied all of this with extraordinary velocity and ferocity, and mass murdered millions, sterilized, and ended the life of so many people, and felt he had a right to enslave a continent and extinguish entire peoples. And then when America got to Europe and saw what they had wrought, they basically recoiled in fear and in shock, and they said, how could this have come from us? And they developed collective amnesia. And, John, that's why you haven't read about it, because even though this was public law in 27 states, no one wanted to admit that we did it. No one wanted to write about it, which is why War Against the Weak is now the standard in so many universities to teach people what we did here and what was done in Nazi Germany and how we can avoid it in the future.
And tell us what you mean when you use the term nugenics. How do the abuses of the past relate to, you know, perhaps what's happening in the world today?
Nugenics is really going to be the next wave of eugenics, where you are judged not on the content of your character, but on the color of your chromosomes. But beyond that, today, it will be on your corporate worth. Santa Fe Railroad undertook genetic testing to discover people with a genetic predisposition for carpal tunnel to avoid hiring people. Insurance companies would like to uninsure people because of something in their ancestry. Maybe somebody had a blood disease, or maybe someone was interpreted as insane by a system that often declared too many people insane for absolutely no reason at all, and often for political reasons or social reasons. And this is why the Genetic Anti-Discrimination Act was passed in England, and it was also passed in the United States, and the prime opponents are insurance companies. So we are just scratching the surface of discovering how our lives can be managed, devalued, enhanced, and manipulated by corporations who can decide what we can do and what we can't do based upon our corporate worth, and all too often that will be based upon perceptions of what we can buy and what we can't buy, what we will spend and what we won't spend, and this new wave of persecution and discrimination will not be based on national dogma and flag and racism, but strictly on money. And the moment that we enter into that cashless society, we have then gone to the very edge of the precipice, and we'll be looking down. It'll just be a slight push or a click of the keyboard that could have us tumble over the edge.
Wow. Well, and I understand two films based on your work are in active production. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, I can't talk about the IBM movie with Brad Pitt, because that's not coming out, that's not supposed to come out till next year, so that I can't talk about. I can tell you there's another movie on War Against the Weak, which is come out of, it's a documentary, and that is basically just coming out of festivals. Now, let me just say for your listeners,
yes.
I'm going to have a number of appearances, thanks to the Holocaust Museum of Southwest Florida. And the very first one will be on Sunday, February 21st, at Temple Shalom. That's on IBM. And that's where people will be able to come and hear all the details and actually see the smoking gun documents. And then I will appear, and I don't know how much of this is public, but I will be appearing at the Ave Maria Law School on Monday, February 22nd at 12:15 to discuss what you were discussing, American eugenics from Long Island to Auschwitz. Now, interesting enough, I'm being honored by the Holocaust Museum with the Abe Price Moral Compass Award. I don't know how one gets in to this Monday, February 22nd, 6 p.m. awards dinner. You'd have to call the Holocaust Museum, but I'm told it's at the Vasari Country Club. I'm inviting anyone who's allowed to come to the Florida Southwestern State College at the Lee campus, 11:30. If they can't catch the Temple Shalom event on IBM, they can get a reprise there. And at 6:30 at night, I'm also redoing the American eugenics piece at the Lee campus of Florida Southwestern State College. And then I'm doing IBM again Wednesday at Florida Gulf Coast University. That's at 10:45 Wednesday, February 24th. I wouldn't take so much time to discuss my events if they wouldn't book me everywhere.
Sure.
And then finally, I'll be at St. John the Evangelist Catholic Church, 6 p.m., to finish the last of 22 events that I'm doing in February, 6:30, Wednesday, February 24th. That's one of the biggest synagogues, one of the biggest churches, three of the finest colleges. I didn't do them all, but I did most of them. And if there's anyone interested in writing or publishing, we have a special event that I'm inviting you, John Davis, to attend. And I don't know if you're allowed to enter this, but the Naples Press Club has an insider author breakfast reception for me, where I'm going to discuss at 8 a.m. Tuesday, February 23rd, all the ins and outs of publishing and the secrets of how I get to sell a book an hour and travel around the world and work independently. All this information is at edwinblack.com, which is my website. Just click on my Events 2016 tab, and you'll be able to see all of my events. And, John, I'm hoping to meet you when I get down to Naples. I just spent a week in Flint, Michigan, and East Lansing on civil rights and environmental justice for the water crisis there. And it was minus 22 below. My contract with the Holocaust Museum says it's going to be above freezing when I get to Naples. I hope
yes,
everyone
yes,
can
we are well above freezing. Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for your time, Edwin Black. Great to speak with you. Look forward to meeting you next week. He'll be coming to Southwest Florida for a series of speaking events. You can see a complete list at the Southwest Florida Holocaust Museum and Education Center website, as well as at Edwin Black's own website, edwinblack.com. Thanks so much for your time. We're taking a short break, but when we return, we'll get a status update on issues related to South Florida's water woes in light of record high winter rainfall that the region has been receiving. That's coming up just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.